And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism Audio Show number 27. I'm Brian Shell, your host for the show. As always, you can find the text for everything in this show and all past episodes on our website at www.dailybuddhism.com. As usual this week, we got into several new topics, and I did a couple of reviews. I have a big stack of Buddhist books and CDs here that I'll be covering in the next few weeks. Since there's nothing better than giving or getting Buddhist books for Christmas, I'll be bulking up on the reviews for the next few weeks. There are a few minor changes on the website to announce this week. If you look at the menu bar across the top of the screen there, are a few new tabs at www.dailybuddhism.com. The new audio archive page has a special new Flash audio player that works a lot like a jukebox of the older podcasts. It makes finding older shows easier than going through the menus. Now, it doesn't seem to work in all browsers. I noticed it doesn't work on my Safari, but it works fine in Firefox. So if it works for you, then enjoy it. And if it doesn't, then click on the podcast category and find the shows the old way. Also, on the top bar of the site is a new Media Store tab. You'll find my recorded CDs available there, and I've redone these a little bit. The Tao Remastered, the Dhammapada, and the collection of very old podcasts are still available, only in a new format. Rather than offer that material in an audio CD format like before, I've now changed each offering to collections of MP3s on a single CD for a lower price. Why pay for three audio CDs if you can get the same material on one CD full of MP3s? If you really want the audio format, you can always write your own audio CDs from those if you really want to. And the third new tab on the page is for the Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. I've worked out what the subscription rates are going to be now, and you can check them out there. You can't buy a subscription there yet, but I'll get that set up once I stop offering the files for free in a couple of weeks. Issues 1 and 2 are already out, and issues 3 and 4 will be sent out in the podcast feed as freebies just like before. I'm putting the finishing touches on issue 3 right now, and it'll go online either tonight or Saturday morning. Now keep in mind that the Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine is an optional expansion to the Daily Buddhism, not a replacement. The free emails and podcasts are not going to go away. And that should cover all the announcements for this week. So let's get on with the show. Okay, first off, Monday we had a movie review. I reviewed Zen Noir. Directed by Mark Rosenbusch, it's English and 71 minutes long. There's a link to order it from Amazon on the website. Okay, I saw the trailers for this movie last winter, and it looked hilarious. So when I finally had a chance to watch the film, I jumped at it. Zen humor is not something you see every day, and this was obviously advertised as a comedy. The movie is narrated in the first person by a 1930s hard-boiled detective type. Clearly a Mike Hammer parody, complete with tough guy monologues and beard stubble. The action starts out with a chuckle as an old Zen monk sits in a room with other monks meditating. He then keels over and dies, but the others are so into their meditation they don't even notice. So when the detective arrives and starts asking questions about the murder, well, you know what kind of answers you get when you ask a question in Zen. The first 25 minutes or so were pretty rough. The back-and-forth, rapid-fire questions and non-answers got old fast, and the overuse of noir and Zen cliches got to the point of silliness, which was probably intentional, but really wasn't all that funny. By around the 20-minute mark, I was ready to declare this the stupidest movie ever. But then the silliness slowed down and the Zen took over. There's still the occasional funny line, such as when the detective asks the master, "What happens when we, you know, die?"
"Don't know."
"Why not?"
"Not dead yet."
Okay, so the humor like that is pretty much in the delivery. But there are dozens of images of oranges and glimpses of oranges in different scenes and positions flashing on screen throughout the drama. Once the meaning of the orange is explained, many things become clear both in the movie and in real Zen itself. There really is a lot of real Zen in the movie, and it was obviously very cleverly written. But I still have to ask myself after seeing it, is it entertaining? And the problem is that even after watching the movie, I'm not really sure. This is definitely one of those love it or hate it movies, and I suspect most audiences are going to be split down the middle. If someone is fairly knowledgeable about basic Zen ideas, then there is a message in the ending of the movie. However, for the person who isn't very familiar with Zen ideas, this is going to be a seriously boring movie that makes no sense whatsoever. So I'm going to give this one a 3 of 5, since I really just don't know what to think. Or maybe I should give it a 5 of 5, for the same reason. Zen makes me crazy sometimes. And then it was time to answer a letter. A reader recently wrote, I wish to know if Buddhist philosophy was actually codified by the Buddha himself or by some other saint like Nagarjuna later. The Buddhist philosophy, I think, is actually based on the Vedic philosophy in terms of rebirth and salvation, defined as coming out of the cycle of rebirths, but does not follow the Vedic tradition. Hence, this interest in the origins of the philosophy. I am more interested in knowing how Buddhism is close to Hinduism. Somehow, I like to believe Buddha as the 9th incarnation of Vishnu in the 10 incarnations of Vishnu. I have heard that Buddha, refusing to answer questions about the Vedic philosophy, and recommended his followers to follow Vedas only if they understand it. Is this so? And my response to that question starts out with a disclaimer. This is just my opinion, and there's going to be dissenters wherever verifiable fact competes with faith. And also, I have to admit right now that my knowledge of Hinduism is nowhere near that of Buddhism. But to my knowledge, the Vedas, which are one of the Hindu scriptures, did advocate an escape from samsara, which is the cycle of rebirth, just like Hinduism and Buddhism are both the same with that. But I do know that the Hindus had definite ideas of heaven and hell, which Buddhism does not support for the most part. Buddhism has always been a bit vague about exactly what happens when one reaches nirvana. Generally speaking, yes. Much of the religious side of Buddhism came straight from Hinduism. As far as I'm aware, Buddha never codified anything, as far as I know. According to legend, his words were written down just after his death. Although more probably, the first writings were collected over a long period of years after his death. Very little of what is attributed to Buddha is verifiable. Remember that this was a very long time ago, and modern scholars aren't even in total agreement about the century in which Buddha lived. Now, in my admittedly academically slanted opinion, he almost certainly came up with the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path himself. But beyond that, I wouldn't bet on anything. Still, the words of later authors ring true, so they are of value whether Buddha actually said them or not. With all Buddhist doctrine and text, you must weigh the words yourself and believe what makes sense to you. Remember the basic point of Buddhism. You are not trying to please any kind of god or supreme being. You're trying to reach a very personal goal of enlightenment. Use what works for you, and give up what seems unbelievable. Now, you should always keep on reading and learning, however, so that you're better able to make informed decisions about whether to accept or disregard parts of the doctrines. What doesn't make sense now might make sense in a couple years after you've studied more. So bear in mind that not all sects of Buddhism will agree with me on this. Some are very doctrinal and strict. Buddha, or someone writing in his name, is said to have refused to answer questions about religious topics such as the existence of gods, afterlife, magic, and so forth. Basically, he stated that there was simply no way to experience those things firsthand, so there's no way to know for certain about them. Anything else would be speculation and a waste of time. Now, maybe someday I'll do a multi-part series on Hinduism. Buddhism owes a lot to the history of Hinduism. It's very useful to know that. And it'll give me a chance to get back up to speed on that material. Let me know if there's interest in that subject.
Hi, Brian. This is Liz. I was wondering if there was a possibility of doing a podcast on how to become Buddhist and maybe covering like mantras or, you know, mantra practices, mantra meditation, you know, what a Buddhist rosary is. Just some ideas that, you know, I thought could possibly, you know, be on the show because I was listening to your podcast, So You Want to Become Buddhist. And I noticed that you answered a reviewer's question. You didn't really tell us stuff on how to become Buddhist, and I was wondering if there was any steps. So, yeah, if you could, that would be greatly appreciated. Thanks.
Okay, I will talk more on the subject on how to become a Buddhist some more next week, and probably something on mantras as well. But you did briefly mention Buddhist rosaries, and I explain that right now. Buddhist rosary beads consists of either 108 beads, most commonly for Mahayana Buddhists, or sometimes 27 beads for Pure Land Buddhists. These are called mala, or japa mala. Hinduism also uses them, and they're usually made from wood, preferably sandalwood, while the string is traditionally either human hair or silk. They're commonly used for counting prayers, chants, or repeated mantras. Some mantras are meant to be repeated hundreds and hundreds of times, and the person meditating will use the mala, moving their fingers across the beads rather than break their concentration by counting. Depending on the group or sect, sometimes it makes a difference which hand or which fingers are used to count the beads. Why 108 beads? Well, according to Wikipedia, in traditional Buddhist thought, people are said to have 108 afflictions or klesas. There are six senses: sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and consciousness, which is multiplied by three reactions: positive, negative, or indifference. And that makes 18 feelings. Each of these feelings can be either attached to pleasure or detached from pleasure, which, if you do the math, comes up to 36 passions, each of which may be manifested in the past, present, or future. All the combinations of all these things makes a total of 108, which are represented by the beads. The same number is also used in Japanese New Year services where a bell is rung 108 times. In addition, practitioners of Vajrayana Buddhism use the number 108 for a different purpose. After reciting 100 mantras, 8 extra mantras are done to compensate for any errors. And there's a link to the Edmonton Buddhist Meditation Group on the website, which has a little bit more information about the beads and mantras. And then I did a second review for the week. This one was a book called The Saint of Kathmandu and Other Tales of the Sacred and Distant Lands by Sarah Levine. 242 pages. And this is a little bit different from the other books I've reviewed here. It's not strictly a Buddhist book. It's about various religions around the world. There are 6 stories in the book, each one a more or less true story in the experience of the author, a British anthropologist. The first tale is about spirit possession in a Muslim town. The second is about the cult of the Virgin in Mexico, witchcraft in Kenya, Buddhism in Kathmandu, charismatic Christianity in Hong Kong, and Zen in America. For the readers of Daily Buddhism, I'm going to focus on just 2 of the stories, although all of them are worth your time. The third story in the book involves the author's trip from Kathmandu to India, where she visits the places where the Buddha gained his enlightenment and also the spot where he died. Along the way, she has many discussions with Guruma, the leader of the group and a Nepalese nun, as well as being the titular saint of the book. Guruma's stories show what it was like to be a little girl being forced into an arranged marriage, her escape and distant travels to the nunnery, and then her later work in bringing the Dharma to thousands of women who otherwise would be neglected by the male-dominated society in India and Nepal. Interestingly, early in the story, the author laments the possibility of having to talk about Western Buddhism with 2 Americans. Yet, at the end of the story, she finds that she can't tolerate the more disciplined approach of the Eastern Buddhists. And then, the sixth and last story is another interesting one also. It's about the author's encounter with an American Zen master who is said to be the very first American Zen master. Don't know if that's true or not. Well, the author is initially taken by the quirky Zen master and artist. She quickly discovers the dark side of the situation. The man loves being the center of attention. He's a control freak and never wanted to be a teacher in the first place. He, as well as his students, became victims of his own cult of personality. Zen masters do generally come off as somewhat arrogant in most stories, but this story gives a much more real sense of the problem, which is probably much more widespread than we in the West would probably like to believe. Overall, it's an interesting book with an interesting perspective. There are things here both positive and negative about all these various groups and their religions. The author is clearly more interested in the people and their attitudes than the places she visits or the beliefs the people hold. And the stories she relates are very personal in nature. You aren't going to learn anything about how to practice Buddhism with this book, but it's a good read and it's fun to visit the unusual cultures and share the odd experiences the author relates with us here. The final chapter in particular shows us some of the inherent problems with lineage traditions, where it is assumed that the teacher is always right. And it finally asks the question, once you reach enlightenment, does it last forever, or does it fade over time? Which I thought was a very interesting question. And then lastly, on Friday, I posted one that I wasn't really sure I wanted to post. I thought long and hard about asking this question. But the Daily Buddhism podcast and website is, partially at least, designed to help you apply Buddhist ideas and principles to everyday life, so I figured it does apply. So listen along and bear with me to the end, and you decide. Our Buddhist President, Politics and Religion. This one's not a lesson I want you to teach me about something I generally don't follow much. We're less than 2 weeks away from the American presidential election, and the polls seem to show the two candidates extremely close. For every poll that shows one candidate ahead, another shows the other guy winning. The closeness of this race, and the previous two as well, shows that we're deeply divided as to our opinions on how the country should be run. The rest of the world looks on with bated breath, the financial markets are uncertain, the partisans have pulled out all their dirty tricks, and some people just want the candidate's signs out of the neighbor's yard. But this is a big one, and everyone who can vote should. Now, I am not going to tell you how to vote, but I would want you guys to advise me which way to go, taking your Buddhist thoughts into consideration. I really want your feedback on this one, as I'm still sort of undecided. Personally, I don't believe anything I hear from either side anymore, as it's all just campaign promises and what people want to hear, whether it's true or not. Yes, I've gotten very cynical over it. But the Daily Buddhism is not a political platform. We're here to discuss Buddhism. So let's talk about Buddhism. Turn on your own mental or emotional Buddhist mode and explain to me which candidate is better in that respect in your opinion. Now, neither of them is Buddhist, obviously, but which one seems to support Buddhist ideals and philosophy more? Which is closer to our way of thinking? Post your comment in the blog, or phone in your thoughts at 937-660-4949. Might be a really good time to try that number. Or email me at dailybuddhism@gmail.com. And I'm posting this question on a Friday to allow more time for you to send in feedback. Depending on the number of responses, I may or may not spend a day next week discussing the results. But I really don't want to get into politics too heavily here. Now, as always on the blog, no registration is required to post there, and you're free to use an alias if you want. But all posts are approved or moderated before they become visible, and anything inappropriate will never see the light of day. So post your thoughts one way or another there. And I also have another question for you. Would we even want a Buddhist president? After all, it didn't work out so well for Tibet. And, let's see, I posted that question this morning, And 12 hours later, there's already a bunch of responses on the blog, and I've gotten a couple of emails, and one complaint that I even brought the subject up. And again, like I said, it's not a political platform here, but it is important, and it's something you can do to affect the real world, so I think it applies. But that's all I have for you this week. Check out the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Send me your email comments at dailybuddhism@gmail.com. Or phone in the Daily Buddhism call-in line at 937-660-4949. If you have any questions or comments on anything, let me know. If you aren't already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so easily by clicking on the iTunes button or RSS podcast buttons on the dailybuddhism.com homepage. If you are subscribed to the podcast already and like it, then stop by the iTunes store and post a review there for the show. Also, check out the new weekly Buddhism magazine if you'd like. There's plenty in the works for that coming up. It seems to get bigger every week. And, of course, sign up for the Daily Buddhism emailing list, where everything happens first. Just go to the website. There's a link there in the top right-hand corner for it. And if you'd like, you can send in a donation using any of the buttons on the homepage. A couple of PayPal donate buttons over there. One for a one-shot donation, the other is for a monthly contribution. Anything you would like to send in helps the show. And that's pretty much it for this week. Until next week, try working on some meditating. Just sit, and see you next week.